Hi, everybody. Today is Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. And our friend Colonel Wilkerson is back with us. Welcome back, Larry.
Good to be with you, Nima. Although it's a desperate times.
I want to start, Larry, with the question that is war with Iran the final blow to the American empire, in your opinion? Here is, before going to your answer, here is what Tucker Carlson said. About
good old Tucker.
He's a deeply humane, kind person, and I am saying this because I'm really afraid that my country is going to be further weakened by this. I think we're going to see the end of American empire. Obviously, other nations would like to see that, and this is a perfect way to scuttle the USS America on the shoals of Iran. But it's also going to end, I believe, Trump's presidency and effectively end it. And so that's why I'm saying this.
What do you mean?
Yeah. He literally says that this is a very important issue, not a simple issue.
Absolutely. I just watched a CNN show. I think it was a fairly fresh caught one, where the CNN individual was asking the question, has everyone seen the March testimony to the Congress of the United States of the DNI, Tulsi Gabbard? Boom, they played it like you do. And up came Tulsi saying that it was the assessment of the IC, the intelligence community, that Iran was 3 years away from a nuclear weapon. Not necessarily 3 years away in terms of 60% enrichment, but 3 years away when you take the other factors in. And I had a lot to do with the AQCon network when I was in the State Department, and I know these are true words, that it's one thing to enrich the uranium to the proper amount. It's quite another to put it in a warhead, get that warhead to where it will withstand reentry pressures and temperatures and so forth, get the ballistic missile to accept the warhead and the warhead to accept the missile, and then somehow figure out a way to test all that before you do it and are severely embarrassed or even kill yourself because it doesn't work. And this intelligence community was estimating probably 2 to 3 years for them to do all that. I think that's a fair assessment. I thought that was a fair assessment when it was made before. And then they interview Trump right in the doorway of his aircraft. And they ask him the question and he says, huh? And he looks at him and they ask the question again. And he says, oh, well, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think that's wrong. Well, and then Ali Vaez is on the show and they ask him the question, what do you think of that? And he says, well, it's like this. We went to war in Iraq on fixed intelligence. We're going to war in Iran by ignoring the intelligence. He's right. He's right. And that is the first statement of the preposterous view that Trump has given us all in the last few hours, that we went to war because Israel said, oh, by the way, Bibi's been saying this for 15 years. I've listened to Bibi for 15 years saying Iran is 2 weeks away from a nuclear weapon, 1 week away from a nuclear weapon. So this is preposterous as a casus belli. It really is. And we've missed this. We've missed this entirely. There is no smoking gun that Iran was in that vicinity of making a nuclear weapon that will work. None. And let me back up a minute and tell you about the International Atomic Energy Agency. Full of spies, Mossad, CIA. I was there. I knew what we did with the IAEA with regard to George W. Bush's wishes about them, you know, with regard to Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons program. We twist the IAEA around our fingers. We even appoint the director general from time to time. We went through two or three director general candidates before we would accept one because we want one we can bribe or we can put his arm behind his back and bend. So you got to ask yourself, why did the IAEA come out as it did at such a propitious time with this latest report? Then you got to ask yourself, did they? And my answer to this question, Nima, is yes. did they give Israel the last minute specific coordinates for key elements of Iran's nuclear program so they could bomb them? Yes, that's my answer. So this is the, and this is unfolding, even as I'm speaking, it's unfolding. This is more nefarious even than I thought it was. I thought it was a Yamamoto, Saddam Hussein attack, you know, and that the United States was complicit with it. Well, I was right about the latter. I'm so right about the former that I'm steaming mad. Here we are, the empire in our waning days, blessing this bloody-minded tyrant, murderer, genocidal maniac named Bibi Netanyahu because we cannot escape his clutches, Mearsheimer's view, or because he's doing our wishes, my view. And the latter is far more heinous than the former.
Larry, when it comes to the attack on Iran, you've mentioned the way that maybe IAEA cooperated with Israelis. And when you look at the attack, you see somehow a combination between what has happened with Hezbollah and what has happened with Russia.
Yes.
You know, the same sort of drone going to Iran, and they're trying to do everything with the drones in the initial hours.
Yes.
And decapitation, as we saw with Hezbollah.
Drones planted well in advance, maybe even years ago.
Yeah. They're somehow, they're, these guys who were cooperating with Israel, they were captured by Iran's intelligence. They said that they were cooperating with Israel for a decade.
Yeah. And Israel, and Netanyahu in particular, I shouldn't say Israel, although I want to, because I still see those polls of 82% of Israelis agreeing with him. Israel has done so many nefarious, heinous things that I'm reminded of the biblical prophecy of Jeremiah. Jeremiah was constantly on the Israelites, just like what we used to say, crap on a stick, you know. He was all over them all the time. They were disregarding their true God. They were worshiping mammon. They were attracted to gold and silver and lovely silks and such. He went on and on and on about it. He told them, you will be destroyed. You will be destroyed. And Nebuchadnezzar came and burned their temple, destroyed the state of Israel, called the Israelites, took most of them into slavery that he didn't kill, and put them on a track of that kind of life for at least a half a century. We don't have a Jeremiah today, but there needs to be one. And he needs to point out how vicious, animal-like, cruel, savage, murderous this man Bibi Netanyahu is, followed by apparently 80%+ of the Jewish Israelis. I don't know about the Palestinian Israelis or the Arab Israelis. Half of Israel is that. But too many of them in the Knesset in particular and elsewhere are going along with this stuff. This is a precedent that they are setting in the world, not only of horn-swoggling, if Mearsheimer's right, or doing the wishes of the empire, if I'm right, either one is just as heinous as the other, that won't go away for a long time. This is a precedent-setting set of events. Murder. Civilians. Look at what Iran is doing. Iran is going out of its way to obey the rules of war, you might say. They're hitting targets that are of military significance or industrial significance. Now, that may change because they're being riposted with a totally different attitude. The Israelis will kill anyone. They'll kill everyone. They'll kill men, women, children, beasts, dogs in the street. They'll kill anyone. These are horrendous precedents to be setting. And for the empire to be condoning it and maybe even pushing it, is one devil. Think of what Dwight Eisenhower or Harry Truman or Franklin Roosevelt or anyone from a far more dangerous existential period in our history The world was in terror and peril in 41 and 42 and 43. And here we are doing this. And oh, by the way, Nima, have you checked out Ukraine lately? Russia is destroying Ukraine. What's going to be left of Ukraine is Zelensky's scalp on a telephone pole outside Kyiv. And that's it. And we're just, you know, Trump is just, oh, I've washed my hands of Ukraine. Nothing happening there. And of course, what we're doing, as I've said many times before, we're allowing the friction of war, the dynamics of war, the pressure of war, the ultimate victory of war, especially a one-sided victory like this, to give thoughts that go beyond Ukraine. And we're also tempting those thoughts with things like action against Russian ships in the Baltic Sea. We're looking for a global conflagration here. That's what we're looking for, and we're looking for the use of nuclear weapons. And if Iran keeps up, if Iran keeps up and it really does have the number of missiles that I've been told that it does have, and they're still able to fly, as it were, and Israel is more or less flattened, they'll go to a nuclear weapon too. I have no doubts about that whatsoever. We have seen it displayed. Netanyahu has no conscience. And then when you think about why he's really doing this, why did it suddenly become propitious for him to do what he has been uneasy about doing for 15 years? Why did it become because he's so embroiled in Gaza? He's so embroiled elsewhere, now increasingly in Syria. And because his government almost fell. And the last trump card he had, the last bid he has, is Iran and pulling the United States in. And it is inevitable, if we continue on the current course of events, the current track, with this president, who is an imbecile, a dangerous imbecile, though, we'll go into it. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if that Central Command Commander, General Cirillo, is called upon to execute the ultimate option that I know he has in his war plan, which is to use a nuclear weapon. And then the game's on. Meanwhile, as I said, not only Russia is gaining, China's still sitting there. And we're doing nothing except bleeding ourselves. We're running out of munitions. We're running out of missiles. We're running out of drones. We're running out of loaded ships. We're running out of the kinds of things that we might need in a real war where our fate is existentially threatened, if it's not here, ultimately. It's mind-boggling, Nima. Mind-boggling, especially to a person who's advised the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Secretary of State of the United States at a time when things were not tremendously better, but we were at least dealing with them and we weren't so heinously affected by a criminal. You know, we are today. We're in lockstep with a criminal, an international criminal. Now, I get lots of hate mail for saying that. This is nothing about this anti-Semitic. I couldn't give a less what Netanyahu is. I know he's a murderer. And I know he's a homicidal maniac. He even stole George W. Bush's line in his speech to, and I bet you there aren't two Americans who realize that that was word for word George Bush's line. We cannot allow the world's most dangerous country state to get the world's most dangerous weapons. That's right out of George Bush's speech about Saddam Hussein, and it puts Bibi Netanyahu in an even more flagrant example of aggression that the United Nations is supposed to punish. That's where we are. And Scott's interview was really good about all the different technical things and, you know, this, that, and the other thing about. But the real problem is up in the ether. I know people are dying, and that's a problem. I know people have died by the thousands in Gaza, and that's a problem. But what we're doing is unraveling everything in the world that we've worked for since 1945 to keep this heinous instrument called war at least reasonably in check. We have cried havoc and let slip the dogs of war, to quote Shakespeare. And Netanyahu did it. Did he do it for us? Did we back him because he pays us so much? Or did we back him because he's our attack dog?
Yesterday, Donald Trump has decided to leave G7 meeting after the dinner, if I'm not mistaken, coming back to the United States, saying that the people in Tehran should leave the city.
Yeah.
And all of that. It's somehow
I understand he turned around and agreed on the communique, though. He let them know that he agreed with the communique when they thought he was walking out not agreeing with it. I hope that's true, but that's a small thing.
Yeah. Small thing. Larry, what was the main reason that he left the meeting after dinner? He said he has something important to do. It seems that in those hours, the Israeli headquarters, the intelligence headquarters, Mossad, was attacked by Iranian missiles. I don't know if something happened there because of that. He decided to go to the United States to make some sort of decisions. The way that Israel, by the way, is fighting, Larry, you look at this, you look at this interaction between Iran and Israel, they cannot sustain it. I don't see, without the United States, Israel being able to continue the conflict.
I agree, Nima, and I will tell you this, I'm not sure they can do it with the United States. Our stores are not plentiful. And if Cirillo, you know, we used to not have this problem because Central Command was not the force of choice within the military structure. Actually, when I worked for PACOM, Pacific Command at the time, they were the force of choice and they were the force allocator. So what the SecDef and the president did was send the forces to the PACOM area, and those forces in the Joint Strategic Capabilities Plan, and the JSCAP was monitored out in the Pacific, and forces were sent to the other commands. Well, we never sent anything to Central Command because every president knew you didn't want major U.S. forces, particularly on the ground in that region. Well, now everything is being stuffed to Cirillo. He must be fat and happy. He's a chieftain. He's got all the forces and everything. But what's the real threat to America? It isn't Iran. In fact, it isn't anything in Southwest Asia, other than maybe the Strait being closed. And even that's not a threat to us anymore because we got so much of this filthy oil out in the Permian Basin and elsewhere. And the price is going up above the recovery capability for those people. So they're breathing a sigh of relief out there. Has to be above about $50 to $60 a barrel before it's even economical for them to frack. So they love this sort of thing when the oil price goes up. But there's nothing out there that we should have a four-star there for. There's nothing out there we should have all these military forces out there for, except our attack dog, Israel. Look at what we're doing. This is geostrategic idiocy, insanity, and yet we're doing it. And we've got the right person at the helm to do it because he's a geostrategic idiot.
He said, Larry, in the conversation, that question that he was asked, you talk about CNN, and he said that he doesn't care about what Tulsi Gabbard said.
Bibi told him the truth. Yeah. A truth Bibi's been saying for 15 freaking years.
I would wonder who's gonna be the voice of sanity in the administration. Has this administration lost its mind?
That's the question of the hour. I understand. I haven't seen the full tape, but I understand Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon sort of asked each other that in an interview. I find increasingly that as I watch Tucker, he has more sense than perhaps I thought.
Yeah. They're feeling they're not happy with this situation, Larry. Many people are not happy. I mean, not talking about those people that vote for Democrats, but you're talking about the base of MAGA.
Yes.
Yeah. These people were supporting, voting for Donald Trump, and right now they're getting the totally opposite. They ask for something else that Donald Trump is delivering, the totally different production and that he's making in his mind. Do you believe, Larry, what's going on in the Middle East could bring a world war? Because look at what's happening. The United States yesterday on Monday, the United States has decided to cancel the talks with Russia unilaterally. They're not gonna, because they were supposed to in April, they agreed on having some sort of talks in order to normalize the relationship, but the United States has decided to leave.
I hope this is wrong, but yesterday I heard that we're back to the Biden edict. No talking to the Russians.
Yeah, it was the case. From the Russian side, we've learned that. And China is somehow knows in after Russia and Iran, they're going to go after China, maybe at the same time. But how the situation in the Middle East, see, somehow Middle East is connecting all these forces, all these vectors coming to the Middle East. I don't know if that's an issue in the mind of the Trump administration, because China is so much concerned about the West Asia. And they're not talking that much about it, but they're concerned about West Asia. And we know the Russian concerns. How is that going to be a response on the part of Russia and China if the United States decides to go to a war, as we saw in Iraq, to go and all in war?
Well, what's developed that I've been referring to earlier, you may recall, because of this inexorable movement of power away from the West and accelerated majorly right now by the fact that Putin has apparently made a decision that he's going with the East and he's in both worlds. And he's tried desperately to anchor himself, if you will, in the Western world and not have to deal with the behemoth that lives out there south of Vladivostok. But we've compelled him. We've compelled him to go that way. So I think he's probably made at least a tentative decision, a preliminary decision, that he's going that way. But what does that mean? It means, first of all, that China was stymied with its central road going into Ukraine to debouch and become an entrepot for Europe to put all of China's product there much faster than coming around the Cape or going through the Red Sea, the Suez, or whatever. Now you know what they're doing. They're going down through Iran. And it's a two-prong route. It's a route that comes down sort of along the coast with a railroad. And it's a route that they're crafting that goes right down the Persian Gulf, right out of the heart of the Soviet Union, if you will. That's the way we supplied Stalingrad during World War II. Stalingrad would never have held if that line hadn't been anticipated in 39 and 40, built up. And, you know, we shipped almost as much along that line as we did through Murmansk in terms of Lend-Lease and other supplies for the Soviets. So now we're trying to thwart that one. That's what this is all about if we enter this fray. Now, that's not Trump. He hadn't got a clue of that. He's too big of an idiot to understand that. He's no strategist. But the people around him and behind him, particularly the neoconservatives and the 100 or so billionaires whose names we don't know. We know Thiel, we know Mercer, we know Koch, we know some of the names, but there's many of these names, and about 30% of them are Israeli-American citizens. These are all conspiring to stop this inexorable momentum of movement eastward and to stop it on three different planes. And this plane now, the southern plane, has become the most dominant. And any decisions we make down there, rest assured that these people behind the scene, not Trump, not Hegseth, he's a strategic midget, but the people behind the scene are going to push Trump and push the administration to get something started down there to thwart the last remaining possibility for China of getting its produce on a much more timely and economical basis than shipping it on the high seas, always a danger to the U.S. Navy, for example, over land. That's part of the warp and woof of this game, I think. And it runs from the Arctic all the way down to the southern end of the Persian Gulf. And we're trying to create that arc of instability in there. And we've done really well up north. You know, we're still dealing with the Russians in the Baltic. I've got a Norwegian friend who told me the other day, she thinks that any moment a war might break out there because of what her government is doing to try and harass the Russian shipping in the Baltic. And, you know, that's like harassing a bull with a red flag. It's not too smart. The submarines alone in the Baltic that the Soviets or the Russians could bring to bear are formidable. And if you want to lose everything you got in a heartbeat, Norway, while we're concentrated on the southern end of this arc of crisis, go ahead and try it. But then you just incite Putin even more. He's got the most battle-hardened, well-trained, industrial base supported military on the face of the earth now. I wouldn't be baiting that bear if I were anybody in that area. But that's what's happening. That the geopolitical scene, which is when I was listening to Scott, I kept wanting to say, Scott, you got the tactical scene down pat, but it's bigger. It's bigger. And there's reasons that the deep state in America is pushing what's happening right now. The reason that they let this cheating and stealing and lousy diplomacy go on. I mean, imagine, would you ever have thought that America would put some state in a diplomatic process and then attack them? I mean, that's absurd. You just don't do that. We've committed crime after crime in our history, but nothing like that at the state level. And here we are doing it. The only thing I can figure is that they are so desperate that they think we're going to collapse and we're going to get wiped out by this huge array of powers in the East. Now, Russia, China strong. There's no way we can fight Russia and China together, Nima. We'd get licked and licked again. And that's what we're looking at. And that's what we have caused. And now we're going to exacerbate it even further by getting China as angry as we have Russia. Because we're now messing in China's last remaining base road initiative communication line. This is insanity.
Larry, yesterday I talked with Ted Postol. He mentioned that the United States and Israel are not capable of destroying Iranian nuclear facilities because they're deep underground and they're not, the capabilities of the weapons they have is not able to reach that and to damage that. They can do something, but nothing of a substantial problem for Iranian nuclear program. So what else comes to mind if they go in that direction to do this? They're going to kill more civilians. They're going to kill more people. They're going to go after infrastructure. It's all about civilians. It's not about the military. This is the problem. This is unbelievable. This is a tragedy when I think of it.
Well, they're going to do the same thing Yamamoto did when he attacked Pearl Harbor so dastardly. You recall the Japanese were still trying to do diplomacy at that time. And FDR was of a mind that the Japanese diplomacy was a mask for the surprise attack. Now, looking at the record really closely, I think it's a toss-up. I think they just fouled up their communications and they didn't get the message in quick enough. But even if it had gotten in, we're going to attack you. You know, even if it had gotten in, it would have been at the last minute. So still a heinous act. I think we're going to wind up with what I've said all along is the only way to ensure our objective is accomplished. And Bibi's going to force that on us if he's not ousted or assassinated before it happens. I'm more and more inclined to think that someone might just put him down. And that is, we have to mount the continent, so to speak. We have to mount an invasion and we have to go and root out the program. Lemon, lemon verse. You know, you just have to go into the holes and you have to get everything and eliminate it. That's a disaster because we'll be defeated. We will be defeated. This nation of Iran with a 5,000 year history and 90,000 people will defeat us on the ground. Because we do not have the ability, as we did in World War II, for example. We took defeats in World War II, Pearl Harbor, Kazarin. We didn't do too well in the beginning. We almost got our ass handed to us on Guadalcanal. It was a very close run battle there. So in the beginning, we were getting hurt. But we had, Yamamoto said, I fear that what we've done is awakened a sleeping tiger and filled it with a fierce resolve. Yamamoto is a captain that had been in the United States. He knew how big we were. He knew what kind of industry we had. We were on top of the world that way. We are not now, Nima. If we invaded another country, we'd last about 2 weeks. We invade Iran, we might last 2 weeks. And then we're out. We're done. We're kaput. And guess what? When we pull a draft, have you seen any of those films of Ukraine, especially the latest one, where they're whacking them over the head with a pole and grabbing them out of restaurants and bars and their own homes and everything and throwing them in the vans? We won't do that in this country because the kids will go to Mexico and Canada. They will not be drafted. They will not be drafted. So let's go into this war. Yep. We will be roundly and soundly defeated. And this is not good. It's not good. I mean, okay, the power's moving to the east. I understand that. But it doesn't have to be a situation where, okay, in order to affect this change, which is inexorable anyway, we're going to have this big holocaust of a war and maybe even use nuclear weapons. Because then, yeah, you stop the power shift maybe, but you also stop humanity. And that's what we're aiming at. That's what it looks like at the end of this might be the ultimate denouement, that we wind up using nuclear weapons. And I say again, I know positively that this country will use a nuclear weapon before it will accede to China and Russia being world hegemons. It doesn't have to be that way. We can all share in the spoils, as it were. But we think it has to be us or no one.
I think China has changed the game, Larry. They're looking for partners, not puppets.
Yes.
The United States still seeking for puppets.
Yes. We're still looking for lackeys out there that we can whip into shape and make do our will.
When we talk about the war with Iran, we talk about Russia and China. There is another country which is important, which is close to Iran, which is in that region. They informed Iran before Israeli attack. They said they're going to attack you. The intelligence informed Iran. It's the Pakistani intelligence.
Yeah.
And even we've heard from
Netanyahu's now got invective for Pakistan.
He said it, Larry. I know that when we see Netanyahu talking about it on media and talking the way, let me play a clip that Netanyahu is talking about Pakistan.
Mission that we have is to prevent a militant Islamic regime from meeting up with nuclear weapons or from nuclear weapons meeting up with a militant Islamic regime. The first is called Iran. The second is called Pakistan, because if these radical regimes have nuclear weapons, they will not obey the rules that have been obeyed in the last almost seven decades.
Listen to that. They will not obey the rules that have been obeyed pretty much in the last seven decades. Where's Israel been? Israel hasn't obeyed a single solitary rule, not even the ones appertaining to nuclear weapons, certainly not the ones appertaining to the law of war, to humanitarian operations, to not starving people as an act of war. Bibi, you are a lying sack of proverbial camel dung. And you've been that for your entire career. And I wonder deeply, does Bibi know that one of Mohammed bin Salman's first trips was to Islamabad with a package of $20 billion US. And that package guaranteed Saudi Arabia warheads on a moment's notice and missiles to carry them. So, Bibi, if you're concerned about that radical Islamic regime in Islamabad, your concern is well registered, because they will put them down there, and you make even a move towards Saudi Arabia and you will disappear. Okay, a balance of terror? Could be. But I think that was a smart move by MBS, a very smart move. And if there is an affinity within the Muslim world that elevated AQ Khan to be, quote, the father of the Muslim bomb, unquote, which is what we found all across Islam, revered person. And if you're looking at it from the perspective of Islamabad, or for that matter, the Muslims in India, now especially with Modi there, or anywhere else, the Arab countries, it's a reasonable feeling. Look, these white people, these assholes in Washington and London and Paris have bombs. Why do they have bombs and we can't have bombs? I mean, that was the appeal of AQ Khan, and it was a powerful appeal. And the counter appeal we made to all those countries, and many more countries than you know of, Nima, countries that if I name them, you would go, what? They were looking for a bomb? Our appeal to them was our decency and our humanity and our respect for human rights and our respect for the rule of law and our respect for the world system, which indeed we had helped to craft. That was our appeal to them, to leave the network and not build a nuclear weapon. What kind of appeal do we have now?
Somehow, Larry, the way that Donald Trump is trying to play with the Iranian government is somehow they don't know, Larry. I look at the tweets of Donald Trump. He says that they have, the United States has complete control of the skies of Iran. And he comes out and said, unconditional surrender. You have to leave Tehran. You have, these are somehow, he feels that this nation has a history. This nation has, they were doing this long before Donald Trump knows what does that mean. And he tries to do the same to them. This is tragic for me, because this is the escalation. This is the more war coming to the region.
Yes. I've got to say, it's deeper and more poignant and more dangerous even than you're suggesting, I think, because what he is showing is he has no grasp of history whatsoever. At the same time, he has no grasp of the concepts that since Westphalia we have put into reasonable effect and reasonable periods of peace in the world. Concepts like state sovereignty, concepts like no colonialism anymore. You know, he has no grasp of any of this, none of it. He is totally ignorant. And in that ignorance is perhaps the greatest danger that the American empire confronts today. I know the people behind him are not ignorant, but their designs, their strategic purposes are heinous. They are world hegemony for the empire, world hegemony for the Palantirs and the Andrews and the Peter Thiels of the world. That's what they want. That's as dangerous as his ignorance. But put the two together, and it's tantamount to catastrophe.
I don't know if you saw the video in which he says that he wants to be Kim Jong-un. he said that when he orders something, everybody says, okay, we're going to go and do it.
Yeah. It's just looking at him leaning out of that airplane when they asked him that point blank question, do you know that your DNI said that Iran was 3 years? Well, I know I don't believe it. I know I don't believe it. Okay, what is that based on? Well, BB told me. Do you know that BB's been saying it for 15 years? No, he doesn't. He doesn't know that BB's been saying it for 15 years.
Let me play the clip for you, Larry.
Sure.
Close to seeing Mr. Kim here at the White House?
Could happen. I mean,
they talked about that yesterday.
I think it's something that could happen. Yeah. Hey, he's the head of a country, and I mean, he is the strong head. Mm-hmm. Don't let anyone think anything different.
Right.
He speaks, and his people sit up at attention. I want my people to do the same.
Well,
extraordinary. Just absolutely extraordinary. Even to be, I guess that was off mic, he thought, off camera. But still extraordinary that the man believes that. Where did he come from? Was he raised in a jar? Was the jar filled with compost? Where did he come from? What school did he graduate from? I know I've done a little research. He didn't graduate from any place that he didn't pay to get into in the first place, or his daddy didn't pay to get him into in the first place. But I didn't think there was a person on the face of the earth with any stature, let alone a TV show and, you know, lots of money, most of it debt money. But who was that stupid and that ignorant and that devoid of any grasp of history whatsoever? The man is a walking question mark until you hear him open his mouth and speak. And then you just say, oh, wow. Tell me the empire is finished. We elected this guy.
Yeah. I look at Pete Hegseth. Who's the guy? He's not doing anything. He's just following the orders of Donald Trump. If someone like Tulsi Gabbard tries to do something to talk, he ignores.
Simply. I had a good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time, 50 years at least, special forces guy in the military for a long time. He sent me some scripts from Hegseth this morning, along with some videos that I hadn't seen. Oh, jeez. You want to say, and this guy's Secretary of Defense? I mean, you know, in one of them, he's so drunk he can't stand up. In another one, he's fondling about three women at the same time. This guy's the Secretary of Defense. Well, he put his sins behind him. That's the other one. The last part of it, the last part of the video is him telling his third wife, who got pregnant when she was married to the person she then divorced or something like that. Anyway, he's telling his third wife, Jesus will take care of us. Jesus will protect us. Let's bend the knee and let's pray. Ah, man, save me from these people.
Larry, we know that if you remember those days that they came to the British Prime Minister came to the Biden administration, wanted to attack Russia, if you remember. The head of Pentagon, the people in Pentagon decided to go against the decision on the part of the Biden and his team. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. That's risky. And do you see that force is still existing in the administration, in the current administration?
I think there are a few there, but I do think they have been meticulously picking out the people whom they feel glaringly so they can't trust to support them and getting rid of them. It started off with, you know, several women. Maybe they wanted to mask it in the idea that they didn't like women wearing four stars or three or whatever. But I think they found some people lower that they got rid of who were probably more apt to be opposed to what they might want to do that was unconstitutional, for example. And they've got 3.5 more years to continue doing that. By the time, and you know, Pete Hegseth is holding prayer meetings in the Pentagon now. Prayer meetings. The Secretary of Defense is holding prayer meetings. Now, what do you think that does to the good order and discipline and morale of the troops who aren't Christians? Even more, and I've learned this to my horror. It's not just who aren't Christian, it's who aren't his type of Christian. So you got Christians who aren't his type of Christian who are just like Jews, just like Muslims, just like atheists and agnostics to him. So you got to be the special kind of Christian that Hegseth is, which means you got to have two or three wives, get drunk all the time, swear all the time, and then ask God for forgiveness, and knowing Jesus will help you. That's his version of Christianity at a light sense. So he's doing this in the Pentagon. How do you identify those people who might oppose you, the people who don't come to your prayer meetings? How do you get rid of them? You get into their chain of command and you tell the chain of command where you can find plenty of these people now, and you tell them, not your kind of Christian, get rid of them. This is blanket stuff that he's doing across the board. And there are other people who are helping him. So three plus more years to get rid of these people before they are necessary for what? Probably to back the coup. And the coup is going to be not Trump. Trump wouldn't know how to pull off a coup that fell in his lap. It's the people behind him. It's the billionaires behind him that most of whom we don't even know the names of, because they're plotting. They're plotting the same way they did in the 30s when they invited Smedley Butler, General Smedley Butler, two-time Medal of Honor winner, Marine Corps, to join them and head their military forces as they pulled off a coup in the middle of the 30s against Roosevelt. And Butler went straight to the Congress and testified. One of the people involved in this was George H.W. Bush's father, Prescott Bush. These are stories that are just, you know, put back there on the shelf. Let's don't talk about that. No, America never came really close to a fascist takeover. We did. And the prospect that it could come again looms large right now. It's not the same kind of deal. These people want a technocratic board, as it were, to run the empire. And they want that technocratic board to have a CEO, a COO, and vice presidents. They don't want them to be elected. They want them to be appointed. And that's where that's, I think, the shadow lurking behind this maniac, this idiot, Donald Trump. I'm wondering sometimes when I think about this really hard, does Bibi know this? Is Bibi complicit with this? Is Bibi going to be one of these tyrants in the background? Or is Bibi ignorant of this too? And when it comes time for them to take over, he'll be squashed like a bug. I don't know. But I do think there's something behind Trump that is ignominious and definitely not democratic.
Larry, with these extreme situations that we're witnessing in the Middle East, something can just start a big confrontation, which would be a false flag operation when it comes to the American bases in the Middle East, or maybe what Netanyahu was suggesting in his latest interview with Fox News. Here is what he said, Larry.
Threat, and I want to talk about President Trump. You just said Iran tried to assassinate President Trump twice. Do you have intel that the assassination attempts on President Trump were directly from Iran?
Through proxies, yes. Through their intel, yes. They want to kill him. Look, he's enemy number one. He's a decisive leader. He never took the path that others took to try to bargain with him in a way that is weak, giving them basically a pathway to enrich uranium, which means a pathway to the bomb, padding it with billions and billions of dollars. He took up this fake agreement and basically tore it up. He killed Qasem Soleimani. He said, made it very clear, including now, you cannot have a nuclear weapon, which means you cannot enrich. He's been very forceful. So for them, he's enemy number one.
Yeah.
Look, they also tried to kill me, but I'm his junior partner.
When did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm his junior partner.
Yeah.
You know, I watched him really closely there. That's the first time I've seen that tape. Thank you. He's losing it. He is losing it. He's got this tit. His face looks a little drawn. I've seen a lot of people like this, and he's losing it. His lies don't even sound appropriate anymore. His lies don't sound believable anymore or realistic. And those are all lies, complete lies. Just like there were lies that they attacked those people in Argentina. That wasn't the Iranians. That was a false flag Israeli operation. Just like there were lies when they hit the embassy in London. The Israeli embassy in London. It was a false flag operation. It was the Israelis that did it. They're experts at it. They look at what they did in Tehran. I mean, look at how they built that intelligence over the years and did what they did. And they have absolutely no compunction in killing anything that walks, anything. Babies, women, children, it doesn't matter. They would kill anything. Because as Jeremiah said about the Israelites, their vision is one of arrogance, one of greed, one of all overweening power. That was Jeremiah's criticism of the Israelites. And when Nebuchadnezzar stepped in and killed them all, Jeremiah was, okay, you said I wasn't right. I know this is biblical, but it's based in historical fact. And the Israeli temple was taken down and destroyed. And so were the Israelites, either that or taken into slavery. This is a cycle that has happened. And this is not anti-Semitic to say this. This is history.
Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today.
Surely.
Great pleasure, as always.
Yeah. Sad times.
Sorry. Sorry for making you sad.
I probably
you're leaving a very sad moment.
Yeah. I'm leaving the world at a very sad moment, and it's really tearing me up. You know, yeah. 80 years old, not long for this world, and I'm watching my country just disintegrate before my eyes. Led by a baboon clown. I mean, come on. I know the people behind him are very smart people and very wealthy people, but to put that man forward as a representative of the United States of America at this critical juncture in world history is just a crime of the first order. I hope you have better times in Brazil. I hope Donald Trump is not infected Lula.
Yeah, no, not yet.
Drilling in the mouth of the Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
See you soon, Larry.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.